Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. All switches thrown. It is a brand new broadcast week at the Horn. It is, in fact, the 12th day of September 2016. This is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you, wonderful you, go if you would like to be part of the chat room extravaganza experience, the multimedia madcap zany 3 hours that take place in cyberspace while this program is live, coming to you via cyberspace. Yes, just go over to the, click on chat room and pick yourself out a screen name and a password. Jump in and you will be promptly greeted by the likes of Anatole, Hoghead, Chug-a-Punch, Steve from Georgistan, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who is leaving the universe in its proper orientation and remaining Sparky this evening. It must be right toasty in the man cave, I'm guessing. So we got that going on, which is good. News out of Hollywood. I heard that there's going to be a... I heard there's going to be a sequel to the now children's classic Despicable Me. Yes. It's going to be called Deplorable Me. Only I'm not expecting the new little henchman to catch on quite like the Minions did. You know, they were so cute and they had those little voices and they were adorable and they said things like banana. No, the henchmen in the Deplorables will instead be apparently rednecks with mullets. And they're just called Trumpansies. That was a long way to go for a really cheap laugh. Yeah, but I tried it. It just kind of came to me. I mean, we don't have a team of 37 writers here. It's just a few of us. Brother Deacon Asa, the third switch is thrown. Everything's coming up roses. They're even acknowledging that we're broadcasting over in the chat room, huh? I don't know what to tell you, but if you're telling me to throw the third switch, it kind of means that oh dear. Yeah. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and it is, you know what it is. It's the first day of the week, and... Oh, good, it's caught on. Early note from Marty. Bob, stop telling people how to vote! Yeah. Oh, hey, Don from Central PA has entered the chat room. Excellent. Thank you very kindly, Randy in PA, noting loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac. Good. Everything that isn't going sideways is a net bonus at this point. Okay, so Brother Deacon Asa did hear me, so good. That saves me a little bit of typing. Let's see, I did the Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid part, right. I did the You Know What Day It Is part, and, Oh, Sparky's headed for the man cave. Okay. No, it's more in Monday. And I mean, we've got the usual embarrassment of riches that more in Monday always brings, but I'm kind of torn. I don't know whether to start with deplorable. The devil and her health care. I'm saving the reverb for later. You know, you don't want to wear it out. Or the national anthem. Oh, goodness gracious. You know, I kind of wish that Miss White Privilege 2016, Tommy Lauren, hadn't put out that shrill, shrieky, preachy, privilege-laden rant that she did, because now, apparently, it's a thing. Not standing for the national anthem, and justifiably so. And it's extended past the professional football level, past a pro soccer player. It's extended past college, and now it's happening. Athletes are taking a knee at the national anthem in high schools. Yeah, it's not without a price. It does not come with without a price. But take for instance the South Jersey Tigers. They had a football game this past Saturday, and their coach, Preston Brown, said, "I'm well aware of the third verse of the national anthem, which is not usually sung, and I know that the words of the song were not originally meant to include people like me." That's the coach. That's not a player. So, you know, gee, Tommy Lauren, maybe this is a little Zensuni moment for you. Keep your privileged pie hole shut, and maybe you won't help things that you hate, you know, grow into national prominence. You know, that it was opening weekend for the No Fun League. Watched a couple of games. Oh, what a glorious, glorious way for the Dallas Cowboys to lose a football game. My goodness gracious. And Tony Romo wasn't even involved. Clock just ticked right down to zero, and yeah. I'm not particularly a Giants fan, but I would like to see the Giants get another Super Bowl ring, so Eli will have a third, so that he'll have one up on Big Brother Peyton in the noogie contest at Thanksgiving and Christmas every year. Mm-hmm. Maury High in Norfolk, Virginia, players there kneeling. Auburn High in Rockford, Illinois, people there kneeling. Yeah. Lincoln, Nebraska. Brunswick High School in Ohio. Yeah. Rodney Axon there decided to kneel after he heard his own teammates using racial slurs against their opponents. His own team, of course, turned on him. Backlash, to say the least. And then there's... Then there's Talabama. And you know, every now and then, I get a little note from somebody saying, Bob, I really think you should stop calling places Mississippi Stan and Talabama. I mean, really, Bob? And my only response is, it wasn't given to them. They earn it. They earn it every damn day. And by way of example, meet McKenzie, Alabama. McKenzie, Alabama. And I'm not entirely sure where McKenzie, Alabama is. Looks to be just down from Odom's Crossroads on the Mobile Road. Not too far from the Florida line. It's in both Butler and Kanaka counties. Kanaka is not just a sausage. But they had a football game there over the weekend, and of course, it wouldn't be Friday night and football in Alabama if you didn't have a good gospel sharp there to offer up the prayer. Mm-hmm. And your national anthem. Houston County High School was the opponent of the McKenzie High School. The gospel sharp in question was a fellow by the name of Pastor Alan Joyner, brother Alan Joyner of Sweet Home Baptist Church in McKenzie. Because they don't recognize no damned old ACLU down there in Talabama. They gonna worship as they sees fit. I guess we can tell what I decided on for More End Monday, can't we? Yes. Mm-hmm. When they got around to the national anthem, Pastor Alan Joyner, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual that he is, Bible-believing, he said, if you don't want to stand for the national anthem, you can line up over there by the fence. Now let's remember, please. Let's remember, I could have saved this for Wednesday, but in the grand universal balance, this one kind of made the little pan go thunk for More End Monday. It just did. Remember, this is a minister of the gospel of the saving grace of Christ Jesus. Yeah. Amen. Mm-hmm. And he announced to those assembled, and Lordy, they clapped, oh, they cheered, and they clapped, and they hooted, and they hollered, because they is so proud of him not being politically correct, Pastor Alan Joyner of Sweet Home Baptist Church. Because he said he took the microphone, and he said, if you don't want to stand for the national anthem, you can line up over there by the fence and let our military personnel take a few shots at you, since they're taking shots for you. Yeah, see what he did there? Oh, he's clever, Pastor, Brother, Minister, Reverend Joyner. And then Sweet Home Baptist Church got so excited about it, they even posted, they was proud of it. They was proud of their servant of the Prince of Peace, encouraging the military to just sort of randomly execute people for manifestations of free speech. They's proud of it down there in Butler County, Alabama, to the McKenzie High School. Mm-hmm. They're proud, terrible proud. But then the superintendent of Butler County Schools, Amy Bryan, what's she doing in a position of power? Don't she know it says in the good book there that she is to remain silent and subservient to men? Well, Amy Bryan didn't cotton to it too much. I mean, I'm sure she's as good a family values Republican as anybody else in Alabama, but she said patriotism should be a part of school events, but threats of shooting people who aren't patriotic, even in jest, have no place at a school. Threats of violence are a violation of school policy and certainly not condoned by the school board. Did you notice what she did in there? Because I did right away. That's why I said that Butler County School Superintendent Amy Bryan, probably as good a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, family values Republican as any they got there in Butler County. And I know that because she said patriotism should be a part of school events, but threats of shooting people who aren't patriotic, even in jest, blah, 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 have no place at school. So she sent a not so subtle message, didn't she? That people who do not stand for the national anthem are, by her words and by her definition, not patriotic. I, for one, take issue with this. I think it is, look, most of the people who are standing up and placing their hands over their heart are doing so in a motion that is most generously described as robotic. One, they know next to nothing about the origins of the song. They know even less about Francis Scott Key. They don't know about verse 3, and even if they did, they'd say, well, slavery's over. Get over it. I, for one, think that calling attention to one's country's manifest flaws and coupling that with an attempt to make one's country better is the height of patriotism. Now, what of Sweet Home Baptist Church? Well, when the fur begun to fly, Sweet Home Baptist Church said, Sweet Home Baptist Church. No. Okay, we got to have something to scan a little better. Sweet Home Baptist Tabernacle. Right. No more singing. And there went tonight's fundraising. Sweet Home Baptist Church said, we stand by our pastor and are proud of him. What he said was taken out of context and misquoted several times over. For all of our members, remember the words of Matthew 5, 38, 39, and don't try to retaliate or fight any of the negative comments. Anyone who has anything negative to say about it on our page will be banned and ignored. I don't think Sweet Home Baptist Church, being morons, really understands the whole Facebook thing, do they? Because, I mean, once you've been banned, it's kind of hard to ignore them. And if you're sitting there posting, ignoring you, you heathen, well, you're not really ignoring now, are you? No. Okay, so it was taken out of context. Matthew 5, 38, 39. Matthew 5, 38, 39. Okie dokie. 5, 38 to 39. Okay, sure. Why not? We don't want anything with the King James Version here. That's the language God spoke and done give it originally in. Ye have heard it said that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say unto you that ye resist not evil, but whosoever shall smite thee on thy right cheek, turn to him the other also. That's what I funked it was. But there's also something in there, because, you know, Lord knows they want Ten Commandments posted all over the place, you know, right there, you know, right there in the chips and bread aisle to the Wiggling Pig, you know, and down there to the Dollar General over there by the charcoal briquettes, and in the schools and the courthouse, and over there to over there to Raylene Bonnie Sue's emporium of hair magnificence, absolutely everywhere. And there is this little old commandment about not bearing witness, bearing false witness against your neighbors. Because, see, they said that it was taken out of context and misquoted several times over. Well, I got the whole thing right here. If you don't want to stand for the national anthem, you can line up over there by the fence and let our military personnel take a few shots at you, since they're taking shots for you. There's the whole thing. Pastor Joyner, let me introduce you to Ayatollah Who's Fuck. Ayatollah Who's Fuck, Pastor Joyner. I think y'all have something in common. I think you'll find something to talk about real quick. Yeah. So we've got that. Over at Daugherty Memorial High School in Worcester, Mass., another player, Mike Oppong, well, he was initially suspended for a game because he wouldn't stand during the national anthem. But then, because the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has a bunch of commies in it, that decision was reversed when the community raised hell. You know, as in, how dare you? As in, that's his First Amendment right. Don't you be suppressing his First Amendment right? I mean, it's not like he walked out and unfolded a banner that said "Bong Hits for Jesus." When reporters got hold of Mike Oppong, he said, "We are disrespected and mistreated everywhere we go on a daily basis because of our skin color, and I'm sick of it." You know what all these young athletes need? A good talking to by Tommy Lauren. I mean, after all, she's probably not even 10 years older than them, and she's got such a wealth of life experience with which to set them on the path of, you know, righteousness. But just in case you ever have those moments where you go, you know, why does Bob say Stan after the name of all the southern states? Well, ask Brother Pastor Minister Reverend Joyner. I'm sure he could maybe offer to have you shot. Yeah. You know, 24 minutes after the end of the program, and I neglected to mention, because, well, I mean, you know, that this is, in fact, a listener-supported program. We've got $200 to raise this evening, just like we've got $200 to raise most every evening when it's not 3 or 4 or 5. But it would be nice to start the week on an even keel and keep it that way. And I'm proud to say thank you, Paula and Joe. It's been knocked down to 190, and from there, it's been knocked down to 189. Why 189? You might ask. Well, it's been knocked down to 189 because just a little bit ago, I had a notification from the PayPal that we had received a $1 contribution. And I want to make sure that I get this right. We had a $1 contribution from Diane. And thank you, Diane, for doing that. And there's a post up. It's pinned to the top there over at the Horn group page on Facebook. That was a very important dollar. Well, I mean, they're all very important, but no. Remember, and I announced this last week, Larry, who says Hillary speaks for him, she says, "Hi, Larry." Larry announced announced a challenge. It's a very special challenge. It's a very important challenge. And it's a very easy challenge. Larry is hoping to create an entire week's funding at the Horn based upon people kicking in a dollar at a time. Now, this is going to go on till September the 30th because I wanted to make sure to give people plenty of time to do this. If you've never contributed to the Horn, if you listen a lot and everything, it doesn't matter. You know, we don't send a bill, but this is an excellent opportunity to get involved for next to nothing and double your money and see how a whole lot of people working together can do something really, really good. And toward that end, Larry is looking for 333 people to kick in a buck apiece. Yeah, can you even get a Crystal Burger or a single White Castle for, maybe they're still 69, 79 cents. I don't know. But you darn sure are still going to be hungry. But there's a buck. Any cup of coffee you can get for less than a buck out there in capitalist America, I don't recommend you drink. But Diane got us started on that this evening, and I'm very, very appreciative of it. And I'm happy to announce that we only have 300 more people to go because we knocked down the first $33 of it over the weekend. One person at a time. Just go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute, fill out the stuff on the first screen of PayPal, and kick in a buck. If you've never done it before, A, you will get a mention on the program, just like this. And B, you'll be a humongous part of creating an entire week's funding for the Horn. Huh? Yeah. I don't know what better incentive I could offer. Now, please, and I got nothing against Postal Service, but please don't send me an email saying, "Hey, Bob, I want to mail the dollar." Because in this particular case, it will cost you more to mail the dollar than it will to do PayPal. And in addition, because I had an email, it was a very kind email. John Fox forwarded it on to me yesterday evening. And it was, it was very nice. And this note, this particular note, goes out to Fab. And Fab wrote, I bought a tablet a couple of months ago, downloaded the TuneIn app, came across Bob Kincaid. What a joy! Best progressive left, can't get enough, listen to the replays again and again. Then I tried to contribute. No offense, but it literally is impossible for me. I don't dabble in social media, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. I don't use PayPal. When I tried the credit card, just finding it was difficult. It sent me back into the eternal loop to hell on earth. Frustration is a mild word. I was sent back to the PayPal page because it said I apparently have a PayPal account. I haven't used PayPal in over 10 years. ! Exclamation point, etc. Is Roger Stone your page master? Oh, that's cold. That's just cold. No. John Fox is the manages the web page, and he does a fine job of it. And he, like every other part of this program and this network, never sends a bill. But, you know, PayPal's what there is. Anywho, Fab says, I'm retired and sending money to anyone is difficult. After taxes, I net about $400 a month. Contributing's a big deal. Redo the goddamn website so people like me can contribute. You probably lose a lot of contribution-minded people who, as I get frustrated about the setup. I want to pay with my credit card online at your website. I want you to succeed. Hell, I want you to take over MSNBC. You're losing money from people who want to give you money for free. Again, Bob Kincaid has become another hero to me, a unique voice of truth, and the hardest thing to find, honesty. Like some of my other heroes, such as Ralph Nader, Chris Hedges, Noam Chomsky, Frederick Douglass, etc., 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 we differ on WikiLeaks. Please let me give you some of what little I have. You deserve it, and more. And, you know, there's always the mailing address, but you can't do it with a credit card there either. Now, here's the thing, and I mentioned this. I really appreciate the kind words in there, Fab. Thank you very kindly. I had a couple of those notes. Apparently, I struck a chord last week. I don't know what in particular, but it's gratifying to get notes like that. Except the part about, you know, John Fox being Roger Stone. It's lovely when it happens. And so, so there's the contribute tab. We click. Na 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 na. And there's the interface page. And what happens is when you fill all that stuff out, then you click donate, and the next page has the opportunity. There are little credit card icons down there, and it's my understanding that's how you use a credit card. But it can be done. It can be done. But thank you very kindly, Fab, for the kind words. And thanks to Rick in Europe, who sent me a message on Facebook. Rick in Europe said, who is not, you know, billable Rick, or any of our other Ricks, this is Rick in Europe, said, thanks for putting all the episodes from the previous week on the weekend replay stream. I appreciate it. And I don't mention that often, but it's a fact. Every weekend, I put all of Dr. Bill's programs and all of my programs on the replay stream, and it just goes 24/7 as long as, you know, the internet. And usually if the stream goes down, I'll get a note from Randy. Thank you very kindly, Randy, telling me, you know, classical music on the horn stream, at which point I come back here and I click send again and the Vivaldi goes away. So there's that. Okay, thanks, Snork. So now we're at $2.99 on Larry's challenge. VJ said, on Friday I wanted to contribute toward Larry's challenge, but I sent $2 instead of $1. Does it still count toward the challenge? It absolutely does. When people get over a little enthusiastic, that counts too. And so you stepped into an extra slot there, VJ. Thank you very, very kindly. That's where the challenge stands. And with regard to this evening, a note coming from Ron in the not frozen north. Actually, I had a note from from one of my dear friends up in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, said it's one of the most beautiful autumns he's ever seen up that way. I'd love to see it. Need to sneak up there and do some broadcasting from the Northwoods. But Ron, a little bit to the north and east of my friends in the Northwoods, says, I'll issue a 1-2 challenge up to $50. For every $2 that comes in between now and the end of the show, I'll put up $1. If the current balance of $189 is lowered by $100, I'll send along another $50. Huh? That's novel. That's novel indeed. So that would be that makes me cipher. So 50. Wow, that would knock down the fundraising for the evening, wouldn't it? You know, one of these days when we're huge and as Fab says, you know, got in this, we're gonna have somebody on salary don't do nothing but cipher. And that'll be fun. So thank you, Ron. That's on the table. And thank you very kindly for the kind words, Rick. And Fab. It really does. It helps a lot. Let's see. Another thing. Little quick bit of housekeeping. By the way, I'm awfully glad you've made it, Carol Baker. After fighting the road wars of West Missouri Stan. Way back a million years ago, traffic in Kansas City sucked. I imagine it's kind of like Atlanta. It was bad then. It's psychotic now. Man, Atlanta's bad. Just real bad. I used to howl up and down the connector without a care, and not anymore. Oh no. I'm sure Carol was welcomed by Cat Stevens as she came through the door. Oh, where? Oh, housekeeping. Yeah. Everything should be normal for this week, in term, unless, you know, except for maybe Thursday. Thursday, there may be some road warrioring involved. Our eldest daughter has a doctor's appointment and not to engage in too much detail, but we're coming up on 2 weeks of medical neglect, and she ain't getting any better. And the alternatives are not, there just aren't any. And so she's got a regularly scheduled doctor's appointment on Thursday. And I may be required. See, Agnes is over there right now. And she's taking care of the grandbabies. So there may be a little bit of, I don't know, kind of like the Pony Express, only with a pink, white guy driving all over the place. I will try to advise you in advance if that is in fact the case. All right, there's a note from Carol. Carol says, I ponied up $10 for myself and $10 for our PayPal challenged friend. Pony up, Kellison! okay. So there we... We're started on the one-for-two challenge that makes my little noggin hurt. But we'll get there. So that's 169 to go. 169 to go fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Carol. Thank you very kindly. That's amazing. We're 39 minutes into the program and I've only gotten one stop telling people how to vote note. Oh, I'm sure there'll be more opportunities later. But since we were in Talabama a moment ago, and since it is Moran Monday, I saw this. I saw this story courtesy of our buddy Haley in Arkansas with an interesting. Horrifying. Yes, I think that's the word. Horrifying. With a horrifying headline. Why did Alabama paddle 19,000 students in one school year? And here's a hint. It's not like the school year 1954. It's It's the 2013-2014 school year. Mm-hmm. 2013-2014. 19,000 people. Because, you know, kids are people. Students, school children, are people. 19,000 people were beaten in the school systems of Alabama in 1 year. Now, as a matter of Supreme Court precedent, remember the times we've talked about the fact that the Supreme Court gets crap wrong as often or more often than they get stuff right? This is one of those moments. There's a Supreme Court precedent out there that says, well, hell yeah! Spare the 2x4 and spoil the scholar. Duh. So it's okay. It's okay to beat children in school. They'll have to. A whole bunch of states don't. But Alabama actually has a statute on its books. It went to the trouble and the time of using the taxpayers' money to pass a bill which was signed into law saying, here in Alabama, we believe in beating children. So they do. And in 2013 to 2014, they did it 19,000 times. 19,000? That's bigger than most towns in West Virginia. Imagine lining up everybody there in Fraser's Bottom. It's a paddling story, you see. Lining up everybody there in Fraser's Bottom and giving them a thorough paddling. Thank you, sir, may I have another? And all of that creepy stuff. Till you did it 19,000 times. And that's not like four SWATs divided, 19,000 divided by four SWATs. That's probably more like, who knows, 100,000 blows. 100,000 whacks. Now, just as a jumping off place, I know there's other important stuff to talk about, isn't there? Yes, there absolutely is, but we're dealing with morons here. Just as a jumping off place, let's give the school systems of Alabama a benefit of the doubt. Let us judge this case. Let us judge Alabama in the light most favorable to it. Shall we? Yes. If beating students makes students better scholars, then you would expect that Alabama, who beats more students per capita than any other state in the Union, would have the highest ACT scores, the highest SAT scores, the highest statewide standardized testing scores, the highest admissions rate of any state in the Union to places like Harvard and Yale and Stanford and Penn and Princeton and Brown and Cornell and Dartmouth and whatnot. I doubt I even have to go so far as to say, well, Alabama don't. In fact, they're probably way, 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 way down on the list. I was very fortunate growing up in Alabama to grow up in what was at the time, for a place in the Deep South, a rather progressive place. I grew up in an area that had an influx of smart people from other parts of the country that generally boosted the local IQ and intellectual curiosity factor by orders of magnitude. And a school system that was year in and year out just plain excellent as compared to the rest of Alabama, and didn't fare so poorly compared to other public schools. I mean, imagine a public a high school in Alabama offering four or five different foreign languages. Of course, this was a million years ago, and I rode a dinosaur to school every day, but work with me. There's a point here. Well, to be fair, it is not possible to argue that not beating students makes them better students. That's kind of logically challenged. But they have done studies, a lot of them, that show that children's attitudes toward education, toward school, their level of achievement in school, goes down when those children are routinely and typically, occasionally, sometimes more occasional than not, or less, beaten. Now, in other words, you just can't beat. I mean, not beating children won't make them love education, but beating them actually takes whatever you're working with and makes it worse. Which is really not surprising. Beaten women do not make better spouses. Beaten dogs, and I'm not comparing dogs and women, stop it, don't make better dogs. Thrashing the cat doesn't make the cat a better mouser. Beating the hell out of children at home does not make for a more stable domestic environment. But the beatings go on in Talabama. And, to be fair, I was beaten in school. I mean, here I am, right? And that's usually the way the topic works. Well, hell, I got... My old pappy used to take a razor strop to me, and looky here, I'm just fine. What'd you say, woman? Yeah, say it again. Yeah, I'll give you some. That, God dang it, Billy Joe Bob Luke Fred, I don't want to hear none of your mouth. Yeah. But they don't just know that 19,000 people, because they're people, got beaten in Alabama. They know a little bit about the people themselves who got beaten in Alabama in the school year 2013 to 2014, which was not a particularly bad year in Alabama. Boys are far more likely to be beaten in school by officials of the school than girls are. Yeah, and you know what's coming next, don't you? You don't have to really even guess at this. No, you don't. Students who are black or mixed race are considerably more likely to be beaten within the school system than their white classmates. This is not to say that they do not deem it occasionally necessary to beat Billy Joe Bob a little bit. Black males account for 24% of the student population in schools that paddle. You know, beat. Paddle sounds like they put them in a canoe or something. Black males account for 24% of the student population in the schools that beat students. However, of the boys who were paddled, they make up 35%. This is almost as statistically rich as baseball. Girls are paddled with fewer swings. However, when they decide to beat a girl student in Alabama, it's almost twice as likely that that girl will be black. The Southern Poverty Law Center has generated shared out a chart courtesy of the U.S. Department of Education Civil Rights Data Collection. And it's real interesting. Let's see. Selma City Schools. That's another weird thing about Alabama. They got city schools and county schools. You have two completely separate school systems in any, three, four maybe, in any given county. Selma City Schools, the Selma Middle Chat Academy in 2013-2014 beat 301 students out of 464 enrolled. Number of students beaten comes to 64.9%. I'm relying on the chart here. I can't do that kind of ciphering right on. But then there's Butler County, where McKenzie High School is. They also have Greenville High School. Butler County High School has 269 total beaten students out of 650. They're not really trying. And it goes on and on and on. Off of this chart, the lowest number is from Escambia County, A.C. Moore Elementary School. You know, little children, where they beat 59 children out of 242 for a beating percentage of 24.4%. This, as the saying goes, is why we can't have nice things. I mean, what you get taught in school matters. If only Dr. Bill were listening, I'd love to talk to him about this. If you teach children that violence is an appropriate response to noncompliance, congratulations, you've just perpetuated another generation of violence inside your community. And, you know, that's going to be really good for the body politic. A member of the Alabama Board of Education said, Mary Scott Hunter said, proper corporal punishment isn't abuse, and we should be clear about that. Now, she said this without having reviewed any of the research and without ever having been asked about paddling while she served on the Alabama State Board of Education. But she did say, we often see misbehavior in children that comes straight from the home, and I'd like to see some parents lined up and paddled for that. Habitual tardiness and truancy comes to mind. Well, yes. Mary Scott Hunter, I tell you what. We'll let you beat them, and then we'll line them up over there, and Brother Pastor Minister Reverend Joyner can shoot them. Remember a long, long time ago, our buddy Reverbo said, you know, we've been sitting here idling this bus, waiting for a certain contingent of the country to get on board, and sooner or later, you gotta realize that they ain't coming, and you close the door, and you drive away. Leave them in a little fog of biodiesel. Smells a lot like French fries. Now, why talk about this on Moran Monday, when we've got deplorables to discuss? When we've got the pneumonia to talk about? When we've got deep soul-searching inquiries like, why isn't anybody asking about Donald Trump's goddamn prostate, since we're going to worry about every last little thing inside of the devil? Just got to keep the greens happy. Right? Well, because even if it's not there, I see a correlation. Because Alabama's not the only state that beats their students. There are 21 states in the U.S. that beat their students. And of those 21 states, fully 12 of them are in the Confederacy. You know, like the entire Confederacy, nearly. Not all the schools in all those Confederate states beat their students, but somewhere around half do. More than 50% of the schools in Mississippi stand beat students, but it's a little under half in Alabama. Alabama is number 3 in the United States for students getting beaten at school, you know, by employees of the school system. But they're number 3 behind Mississippi and Arkansas. I mean, Jeebus. How about that? They don't beat their students in Hawaii or Alaska. And most of the rest of the country doesn't beat students. But by God, they beat them in Oklahoma to the tune of 1% of the student body. They beat them in Texas to the tune of 0.4%, but it's a big state with a lot of people. 0.7% of the students in Tennessee get beaten. They get beaten in Florida. They get beaten in Louisiana. No beatings in Massachusetts. No beatings in New York. No beatings in Pennsylvania. No beatings in Washington, Oregon, California. Damn liberals. Yeah. And here's my only point, or a point in all of this, as we lead into a discussion of deplorables. Haha, Marty. In Alaska, they likely leave the kids out in the cold with shoes and mittens. In Hawaii, they likely feed them to the sharks. I'd like to hope not. But beatings at school are a relic of a different age, an unenlightened age. I'm told that my grandmother, who educated students and was responsible for probably most of an entire generation on this side of the river learning to read, she taught for 60 years. I'm told that she wielded a mean paddle. Well, Brother Deacon Asa, I get your point. Brother Deacon Asa says, God murdered his own son for your salvation, and you're not even willing to beat your son for his? Shame on you, Kincaid. Well, you'll I don't know. Start them early, I say, Asa. Nail them up. Nail some sense into them. Ron notes, our high school principal had a paddle with holes in it so that it whistled as it moved through the air towards the intended target. It was said to inflict more pain, too. Such discipline was administered in his office and put over the school intercom. He left school administration due to having become overly friendly with one of the female students who left the county to stay with her aunt in Colorado. It stayed there, you know, about 9 months, I'm guessing. Ron didn't write that part. But Ron is having success with his 1-2 challenge. In point of fact, let's see. We're down to $124 to go in Ron's 1-2 challenge. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly to Snort and to Charlie. And remember, don't forget those individual single-dollar bills. That's very important to Larry. And who doesn't want to see the horn receive $666? Come on. Who knows what might happen? Might have to, I don't know, we might do the radio version of Rosemary's Baby or something. Hello, Mother. Don writes, this happened at a school from which I graduated, up in Pennsylvania. Goes back to 2014. Huntington County high school teacher facing criminal charges after the state police. He said he became upset with a flatulent 16-year-old boy in his classroom last week. The incident took place just after 8 a.m. on March 25th at the Juniata Valley High School in Porter Township. Michael Charles Smith was charged with summary counts of harassment and criminal mischief. The accused became angry after a known juvenile farted in his classroom, pushed the teenager against a wall, damaging a thermostat worth $212. The teenager suffered soreness on his left shoulder. But by the same token, Don, I don't think that's a function. That's a matter of state-sanctioned violence, if you get my meaning. When a child is beaten in 12 states of the Confederacy, and 21 states overall in the United States, it's done with the blessing of government. Punky writes in, translated by Scott in San Diego, subject line, beating students. I've never been a parent or a teacher, but it seems rather ignorant that instructions for the treatment of students should come from the Bible or from the speed setting labels on a wearing blender. Whip! Yeah. Not, and that's considerably worse than frappe, I think, if I remember my speed settings. And the point of all of this, as I keep trying to reach, the point of all of this morality is that it should come as no surprise, or you tell me if I'm making an unfair correlation, it comes as no surprise to me that states where they heartily approve of beating students, and where somehow or another they come up with some sort of ex post facto justification for beating students of color almost twice as much as they beat white students, would be the states where Donald Trump holds insurmountable leads. It comes as no surprise to me that states that beat students also have massive rates of poverty. Shocking dropout rates. Imagine that. You beat a student long enough and the student stops wanting to come to school and stops coming to school as quick as it's legal to do so. This, in turn, leads to states with addiction problems, substance abuse problems, domestic violence problems, workforce, workplace problems, but try to explain that to Ms. Mary Scott Hunter, who says that corporal punishment can be correctly applied. What was that about deplorables again?
Yeah.
One of our members of the Fraternity of Steve, under a subject line, Sit Tall, says, with regard to the national anthem, don't some sort of bragging rights come with claiming that one has not stood for the anthem at some point in time prior to its current status as hipster protest symbol? I've often not stood, but I'm just prone to laziness. God, I hate conformist nonconformity. You're all different. Yes, we're all different. I'm not. Yeah, I know. So we have, I hope will be some rousing discussion coming over the course of the next hour and 55 minutes or so. We're going to take a little break. And then, your calls, of course. You know the number, the stress line. Works for some, not for others. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. And then there's the other line, 304-574-8481. 8184. 8184. What am I doing? No. 8178. Over the course of 12 years, you get a lot of numbers banging around in your noggin. 304-574-8178. And then Skype from anywhere on the planet. Skype to Skype. Bob Kincaid Horn. BobKincaidHorn. And because apparently I don't give it out enough, my email, if you want to reach out to the program and have your say that way, BobKincaid@gmail.com. You can also get a message to me on the Facebook, Bob Kincaid, and on the Twitter, @BobKincaid. Okay? Those are all the many and varied ways by which you can participate in the program. You know, I've had this song in our library for a lot of years. It was kindly offered to me many, many years ago. And it just keeps on being relevant. This is listener-supported conversation radio. Putting a dent in it. 1-2 challenge on the table. And $124 bucks to go. This is the horn. Yeah. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Alabama Jesus don't come from Galilee. Alabama Jesus, he looks like General Lee. He ain't got no hook nose. He damn sure ain't Hebrew. If you ain't from around here, honey, he won't do dick for you. Alabama Jesus likes his niggers on the run. Alabama Jesus, run off those Indians. Yes, them folks cleared the land, all part of Jesus' plan. Get that money in the hand of the Alabama clan. Well, he said, keep all you have and screw the poor. Take that money that you're making and make it make some more. There'll be a church on every corner till the number is obscene. I love those Bama biddies. They're so pious and so mean. Alabama Jesus, it's about your pedigree. Alabama Jesus, sure looks that way to me. The proud forget the ignorance, and they've all they're proud to be. They dig for brains, but they love their Lord, and they love their family tree. Alabama Jesus, well, he prays at the ball game. Alabama Jesus was taking me into shame. He don't cotton to evolution, high IQs are humanists. He likes them big and beefy, dull-eyed and questionless. Well, if your preacher gets too liberal talking about that humankind, just drag him out the pulpit, toss him out on his behind. Don't back those local charities like the cursed liberals do. Just judge and moralize and serve your time down in the pew. Keep those tithes coming upwards over 10%. When you make good money, that's a lot of Bible sense. Serving in the third world, you'll never see or know. Now the parasites cross town sleeping on Skid Row. And those people in Third World Kitties, when they get hungry, they can pray to Alabama Jesus 10,000 miles away. Away, away, away. White folks thank their Jesus for white supremacy. The black folks ask their Jesus to make them bourgeoisie. But Jesus knows the danger of a real democracy. So he privatized the education, which serves to bring back segregation. Now, Ten Commandments in a courtroom, and we're schooled about creation. In 4004 B.C., the first white man ate some fruit from the tree. And then he moved to Northern Europe to denounce the papacy. Although he likes the Pope's ideas concerning pregnancy. Come to Alabama. Come to Alabama. Say, man. Say, man. Say, man. It ain't the heat. It ain't the heat. It ain't the heat. It ain't the heat. It's the stupidity. It's the stupidity. It's the stupidity. It's the stupidity.
How I do love that line. It ain't the heat. It's the stupidity. We could, you know, we could like a bumper sticker. Trump, it ain't the heat, it's the stupidity. Alabama, it ain't the heat, it's the stupidity. There's a lot there to work with. Let's run over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, this is Bob from Texas.
Well, hey, Bob, how are you?
All right. Over the weekend, I went to see the program, the movie Sully. And have you heard anything about this?
I've been reading some about it. I haven't seen it myself.
I found it very upsetting in this regard. The movie is basically a documentary. I mean, there's a few little tidbits here and there, you know, like the people that are late to get on the plane, you know, all that kind of a thing that the Hollywood movies do. But the thing that I found very, very upsetting is the movie insinuates that the nasty old government is out to get Sully by saying that, well, you could have done, you didn't have to land that plane in the river. You could have flown that over and landed it at LaGuardia, or they named several different airports. And they openly are confrontational to him. They're very mean. I'm talking about in the film. And it turns out that none of this happened at all. There's a 15-month investigation. This is normal. It's routine. And they came to the same conclusion that there was nothing else he could do but land it in the river. In other words, they were totally on his side. but Clint Eastwood can't resist making a villain out of the government. And the reason I think this is important is because this is what people see. This is what how history is written. And I think it's a big deal.
Well, I think you're right, Bob, because one of the reviews that I read kind of homed in on that, the notion that it's a tragic tale of Sully against the overreaching government, and sort of made this excuse that somehow Clint Eastwood had not allowed his politics to get into the movie. And even just reading it, I went, it kind of sounds like it's nothing but Clint Eastwood's politics. I mean, this is the guy who talked to a chair in 2012, for God's sakes.
That's right. Well, his excuse, which I think is total bull, is that he needed to have an antagonist in there. So just look who he came up with, the nasty old government.
Yeah, I remember when the event happened, I remember the conversations we had here about the fact that it was the rigorous training that he had had because he was a union pilot.
Wow.
That made all the difference.
Yeah. From what I read, and listen, Bob, I'm no expert in this. You have a lot of experts that follow your show. Maybe someone will, you know, call in about all this. But Sully faced nothing more than the standard oversight, which the NTSB, my understanding, is they look into any kind of crash or thing like this to see if there were other ways that could have happened or what we can learn from this.
Oh, back...
But it was not a...
No, it was not a crusade against Sully Sullenberger. I remember way, way back when I rode my dinosaur to work at CNN, we would get the NTSB reports, and they were deep. I mean, like of you know, big plane crashes and stuff like that, where they analyzed each and every little piece of the aircraft. They analyzed the actions of the usually dead pilot and crew. And this was just a routine investigation. And you're right; it came to the same conclusion that Sullenberger came to. But apparently you'd never know that if you're believing Clint Eastwood. And furthermore, the fact that that people are gonna, well, it's gonna be, I don't know. Is this the airplane pilot version of? That movie, what was it, Sniper, about the sniper guy? What's his
name? Yeah, Chris Kyle. American,
yeah, that.
Sniper. I think it is. Well, I didn't go see the American Sniper. I couldn't take that. But this film, it's so true to life in every other aspect that by sticking that little bit of poison in there, I think a lot of people are going to be upset at the government, and I really do think that's part of what he was trying to get across.
He's a Republican, we should not be surprised. But
no, he's a government hater.
Well, okay, yeah. There's a lot of overlap there now, Bob.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, it may not seem a big deal to everybody, but I was very upset. Of course, I live here in Texas, and the people, you could feel in the theater the hatred. You know, at the portrayal, and you know they're going that goddamn government. You know that kind of feeling like that.
Were you checking out the exits for when they started shooting at the screen?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you live there, man. I mean, you know better than I do.
Yeah, it's just at the end of the film they have the real passengers, surviving real passengers, and Sullenberger. You know what I'm saying? It's very much like a true-to-life story in every other aspect except this one little thing.
Well, is there any indication that Sullenberger gave his seal of approval to that aspect of the portrayal?
My understanding is he has a promotion for it on his website, so I would guess that he's okay with it. The explanation that I've searched around today about for different things, they said that this is what he felt in his mind, that he was under siege. he felt that way in his mind. But in fact, the NTSB says we never had any confrontation at all. You'll have to see the movie to see how it's presented. And they do that typical thing where Sully knows he's going to get creamed at the meeting, so he calls up a buddy, and he finds out the simulations that they're going to show. You know what I'm saying? So he's like the hero that exposes that they're going to stick him with something that he shouldn't be stuck with.
And yet at the same time, unmentioned is the fact that all of those nasty regulations are in large part what keeps those aircraft from falling out of the sky and, terminating with extreme prejudice a whole lot of people flying on them.
Right. And I understand he's going around, nationally promoting the movie, and nobody will ask him anything about this, They don't want to lose business.
No, of course not.
I thought it might be interesting to your people that didn't see it. It's really a very well done film. I'm talking about just the way the telling of the story. But
Clint Eastwood is a master filmmaker. I think my favorite movie that he made was. Was the Iwo, he made that pair of films about Iwo Jima, Flags of Our Fathers from the American perspective, and then he made one from the Japanese perspective that was just heartrending.
Yeah.
And one of the fine filmmaking. But I don't think it got quite the same notice over here simply because, it was about the bad guys.
That's true.
Whom he happened to portray as being intensely human.
Well, do you buy that a film has to have an antagonist in it to make it a good film?
If you go back to Aristotle's Poetics, he said it did. But I guess absent some sort of dynamic or dramatic tension, then you don't wind up with much of a movie, do you? I mean, in this particular case. I mean, I when I first heard that a movie had been made out of it, Bob, I thought, about what? I mean, this is a heroic man doing a tremendous job and displaying his manifest competence out of a horrible situation. I mean, there weren't any terrorists, in the story, the actual event, if there was an antagonist, it was a damn bird, right?
That's right. Well, that's true. But to me, in a film where there's the tension comes from, you're watching people get on this plane and you already know they're going to go through hell, And then the tension of he's got to make a decision, what am I going to do? And I don't know, that's enough for me without pointing that the government was a bad guy. As a matter of fact, I thought that spoiled the film.
Well, and I guess that would be another question I would have of you, having seen it. Is there anything good to be said for the support that he received from his union?
Yeah, I guess not.
I mean, because if I understand correctly, it's just Sully against the universe, isn't it?
That's right. Well, see, they have all these simulations, the NTSB, and all the simulations are showing you could have landed that plane at LaGuardia. They got all these scowls on their faces, and They're it's like a trial.
And but I'm guessing are there any scenes that show him having the counsel of a lawyer?
No. You know how Clint Eastwood is. He's one man against the world, and he figures out on his own. He calls up a buddy and gets a favor and knows what simulations they're going to show, and then he comes up with the thing. Well, you didn't put the human factor in there. You ran something on basically a computer. Deciding, instantaneously to turn towards LaGuardia. And a human would need a little bit of time to figure that out. So that's the kind of idea behind it.
Well, in the age in which we live, Bob, I guess we just have to be We have to take our little victories where we can find them. At least in this case, it was not directed by Mel Gibson, in which case Sully would have been stretched on the rack as he was screaming, "Freedom!" and painted blue.
All right. Well, that's really all I have. That's all I have, Bob.
Well, it's always a pleasure talking to you, Bob.
Thanks again for your program. It's fantastic.
Oh, thanks again for all your support and the call. Now I'm curious. I may have to figure out a way to watch the movie.
Okay. All right.
See you, Bob.
Thank you.
Our buddy Bob calling from Texas. And from Texas, let's go a little ways north and speak with Ms. Carol. Are you there, Carol?
All of me.
All of you.
Yes.
Not just not just the parts that don't have pneumonia.
Yes, I'm back in my front too.
Oh, how are you?
About average. I was listening with fascination on your story about beating children in school. And I wanted to tell you a story about my better half.
Yes.
He was raised in the Ozarks back and started going to school back in the early 40s. Yes, he's that old. And that was back in the day when there were no such thing as school buses and kids lived far enough away from school that they would ride their ponies and their horses to school. And at the time, his father was the principal of the high school. And he, his father had gotten into some sort of a land dispute with one of the neighbors. It went to court and his father won. So the children of this man, who were two high school boys, decided that they were going to exact their pound of flesh on the superintendent of school's six-year-old, who was Vaughn. And for 2 years, every day, this kid would get on his pony, start to school, and when he got just out of sight, these two boys would be laying in wait for him. Punch him in the face, knock him off his pony, and then proceed to beat him every step of the way on the way to school. And told him if he told anybody that they'd burn his house down with all of his family in it.
Which, in the Ozarks, is not necessarily an idle threat.
It's not an idle threat. And he was six, and these were high school boys, and he was six. So he believed them. So by the time he got to school, he was so beat up, and he was so scared, and he knew that at the end of the day that they were going to beat him all the way home. And that's what they did. So all day long, all he could think about was the beating that he was going to get on the way home. And it was not conducive to really good learning.
No, that's not a healthy learning environment, at least not as it's currently.
No. So his teacher decided that he was a stupid boy and he just wasn't paying any attention. So you know what she did?
Beat him.
She beat him. And then when he got home from school, the word had already gotten to his father that he hadn't been paying attention in school, so you know what he got when he got home?
A beating.
A beating. Well, this went on for 2 years, and one day these boys got a little overzealous in beating up this little kid, and when he got home, they had knocked him off, and he had hit a rock on the side of the road, and it just sliced his face open. And, of course, the teacher didn't ask any questions about that. She just beat him. And when he got home, after his beating on the way home, he walked in the door and his father looked at him and he said, "What happened to you?" And he said, "I fell off my pony." And that's all he would say. And his father just felt that something wasn't right. So the next morning he followed him. And that's when, for the first time in 2 years, he witnessed what these boys were doing to him. And his father just about killed those two kids. And it was everything that he could do to restrain himself from not killing them.
And there wasn't a jury in the Ozarks would have convicted him for it.
No, there really wasn't. But he grabbed each one of them by the ears and drug them back to their father. and made it crystal clear that if those boys ever laid a hand on one of his kids again, that he couldn't be held responsible. And I knew Lowell in his later years, and he was probably one of the most gentle souls I've ever met in my life. That had to have been really hard for him. Vaughn swore that as he grew older, he said, I used to fantasize about my revenge on those two boys. And he said, I'll never forget it. He said, I was a freshman in high school. I just learned to drive. And he said, and I'd see one of them all the time. And he said, and I just knew that I was going to get my chance one day to get him back. And by this time, and this was a guy who worked really hard on the farm and did all this stuff and would work out just because he just lived for the day when he could get those guys back. And he said, when he was a freshman in high school, the oldest one was killed in a car accident. And he said, in the very next year, the other one got a brain tumor and died a horrible, painful death of brain cancer. And he said, I never again in my life wanted to get revenge on anybody. He said, I couldn't do it. He said, I couldn't hit anybody. I couldn't anything. He's even more gentle and more toned down than his father ever was. And he can't raise a hand to anybody, because he knows what it did to him. So the whole time you were telling that story, I was thinking, nope, not really conducive to learning.
Not a lot going. No. And I mean, but the thing is, the attitude that says let's beat the kids in 2016, Carol, is the same mindset that got him beaten in the 1940s.
It absolutely is.
That means the attitudes have not changed.
No, they haven't.
Since the 1940s.
No, they haven't.
And probably haven't changed since the 1920s or the teens or the aughts or the 1880s. You know, you get the blossoming of what is called modern public education under what, Horace Mann in Massachusetts?
Yes.
In the late 19th century.
Mm-hmm.
And we're largely still operating on that model. You know, you talk about a second grader being beaten up by high school students. Well, it's 2016, and here in my county, we're trying to figure out, because this entire state is falling apart. I'm not kidding. I'm not exaggerating.
Oh no.
The coal cow is dead.
Yep.
Or mostly dead. I shouldn't say it's dead, because they're still blowing up mountains, but they're not employing people at the rates that they used to.
Aren't they going to run out of mountains?
Unfortunately, there's a few left worth blowing up, and they're, you know, they've got 5,000 acres worth of permit applications to blow the living bejesus out of Coal River Mountain. I say that preface to the fact that in this county, which used to have a substantial population, and still, I mean, it's not like, you know, we're not down to, you know, will the last person out please turn out the lights for the bears. But there are parts of the county that are getting close, and it's a huge geographic challenge. And there used to be high schools all over the place.
Right.
And they were geographically situated to serve particular communities that there was no way you were ever going to get all those communities into one high school.
Sure.
And so they can't afford them. The county can't afford them anymore.
Right.
So they're trying to figure out a way to consolidate things. And the latest consolidation plan, which has been approved at the county and state level, calls for the crummy little high school that did so much to help my children learn to hate formal education. Well, it's still going to be one of the high schools that remains in operation. But as an added bonus, they're going to stick kids from grades 6, 7, and 8 in there with the little heathens in grades 9 through 12.
Yes. Here it's 5th through 12th.
What a terrible idea.
Yeah.
I mean, my kids weren't beaten in school here. But at least not by anybody in the school system. You know, Ferg took his fair share from the local student population, one of whom is now apparently one of the ones who stomped him the worst, is now headed up the river for having repeatedly stabbed a guy in a bad drug deal recently.
Yeah. Charming.
And, you know, boys will be boys. But when we're approaching education with attitudes from the 19th century and a schedule from the 19th century, why are we surprised that we're turning out students who are prepared, in fact, to live in the 19th century?
Yes, which is actually perfect for, you know, the GOP plan. Keep them stupid. Keep them subservient.
Give them a lot of, yeah, make sure they get a healthy dose of Jesus when they go to school.
That's right. Make them fear everything.
Yeah, bring in the preacher to threaten to have anybody who doesn't stand for the Pledge of Allegiance shot. And, you know, we're giving hell to Alabama on this, but hey, it doesn't just happen south of the Mason-Dixie line.
No, it doesn't.
I got a lovely story here from Jersey.
Really?
Yeah. And this isn't a public school system. This is a diocese, a Roman Catholic diocese, speaking to all the students in all the private Catholic schools within that diocese, the Diocese of Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, this is going to be good.
You know, one wonders how much money that diocese has paid out for, you know, little kids being raped by priests. But, you know,
well, you know, the Catholics are so good with children.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, nice little family you got there. So, Diocese Superintendent Mary P. Boyle wrote a letter to all the Catholic schools in the Camden Diocese.
Uh-huh.
I'm surprised they let her have that much authority. She wrote,
being a woman and all.
Yeah, she wrote, "It is expected that our administration and coaches, as well as our athletes, will show respect during prayer, pledges, and the playing and singing of the national anthem. The best approach is helping our young people understand that blood was sacrificed so that we can all enjoy the gifts of our faith and our country. However, let me be clear. We are not public institutions, and free speech in all of its demonstrations, including protests, is not a guaranteed right by the Catholic Church."
Yeah, the Catholics don't believe in a constitution.
So, yeah, so what they're saying is, you stand up for that pledge there, or we'll throw your little ass out. Not, I mean, doesn't that just make your heart fill with patriotic pride? Ah, oh, I'll bet you, Miss White Privilege 2016, Tommy Lahren, will be talking about this in a day or so if she isn't already. Meanwhile, note the city school district's response. You know, the public schools. "This is a personal issue, and we strongly respect our students' experiences and their exercising our country's First Amendment rights. Whether our students choose to stand, kneel, or otherwise, we're proud of their engagement with what is more broadly a very important social justice issue." Yeah, somehow I'm thinking that Mary P. Boyle, I don't know, you think Pope Frank would say, yeah, everybody got to stand.
Well, listen, based on the student response on my advanced placement composition
oh, God.
Piece, I'd say they're keeping them stupid.
Okay, so can we touch on that?
Sure.
Because I just kind of sat there reading in slack-jawed amazement, Carol, when I got your note last night. We have within the Horn Family Community Congregation professional educators. Texas Betsy and Will come immediately to mind. although there are others. And so I shared on, we didn't talk about it on the program, but I shared on Facebook your most recent essay over at Hear Women Talk on the Kaepernick situation and, in fact, Miss White Privilege 2016 found her way into there somewhere, didn't she?
Yes. Well, no, not specific, not by name.
No, but by implication.
By implication.
And so, I mean, as usual, you know, you and I share something in common. We don't just sit down and crank something out, you know, every other day, whether it needs to be good. No, when the muse speaks, we listen.
That's right.
And that usually, in your case at least, guarantees that what goes out is freighted with quite a bit of power. And as often as not, more often than not, a certain amount of, shall we say, righteous indignation.
And in this case, squirrels, squirrels, squirrels!
Yeah, look, a squirrel. So, you published this, and then some teacher somewhere, have you sorted out where she is?
I have not sorted out where she is. Now, I tossed this to Betsy, and she looked at it, and she goes, well, you know, technically, it's in the public domain, so it could be used as an example of a modern essayist. So technically it isn't theft.
Technically. The fact that this particular educator, and we use the term loosely, showed no common courtesy is not a problem.
No.
But technically, and we don't exactly know how she did it, but it does speak to the fact that your work gets around.
Yes.
Technically, she bogarted your essay as a means of allegedly teaching children how to write in advanced placement English somewhere in high school.
Yes.
And then had her students post their responses online?
Yes.
And apparently the response you sent me was...
the star student.
Really? I mean, I was thinking like...
no idea.
Why? I'm thinking probably going to get a journalism scholarship from that website that rhymes with light and fart.
Yeah, something like that. But I'm sitting there going, how in the hell did this kid get in an advanced placement class? Seriously.
We all know that I get a burr under my saddle about things like grammar and syntax and the art of word knowing.
I mean, Bob, let's face it.
This thing was eye-crossingly bad.
Right, it was. And my photograph is at the bottom of my essay, as it always is. And somehow the student found me so sexually ambiguous that I was listed as a he, she throughout their commentary. Felt that the Ritalin comment was a joke. Who the fuck was joking? That I didn't even believe in anything that I was writing.
You were just trying to get a rise out of people.
Yeah, I just write to get a rise out of people. And I'm sitting,
you know, I came away with perhaps a suggestion to help this not happen anymore.
Which is?
You need to salt a few more fucks into your writing.
You know, I've been trying to tone that down because, you know, everybody's like, you're such a good writer, but, you know, you just, why do you have to swear? Because I fucking want to.
Yes, I get a few emails about that topicality from time to time.
Like, what fucking ever?
But the thing, you know, you can, I tell you what you do. Going forward, Carol, the first time you use that word, put an asterisk by it. And then down at the bottom of the piece, put another asterisk. You know how this works.
Oh, yes, yes.
And say, that word appears frequently in my writing now to prevent it being bogarted by little right-wing English teachers of questionable skill.
Indeed. And they're indoctrinated little students.
Precisely. So, can I pick your brain about something?
Good. Pick away.
Shall we talk about pneumonia?
Pneumonia? Sure. I've had it.
I had my little misogyny light go off today.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
Because, and this is just the way that I've been taught to think by 25 years of unmitigated 200 proof 9,000 octane filth being pumped into the ears of the country by the right wing Clinton hate machine.
Right.
There was ordinarily a diagnosis of pneumonia would not make me immediately think misogyny.
Nor would I.
But I got there. Because the question I asked myself, Carol, is if Hillary Clinton were premenopausal,
yes,
we wouldn't be hearing a goddamn word about pneumonia, Parkinson's disease, or, you know, Ebola Zika.
No, we'd be hearing about hot flashes and...
And, you know, can we trust, right, can we trust her with the nuclear football at that time of the month?
Uh-huh. Yes, I had a conspiracy theorist go on at some length about her pneumonia as a complication of Parkinson's disease. This man's been at her side for months, dressed as a Secret Service agent. He's actually a doctor of neurosurgery at the Neuroscience Center of Northern New Jersey in Morristown. And I'm like, where do you get this shit? Well, this is a known fact, and this was on the Young Turks, and this has been... And I was like, you know, you seem to know ever so much more about Hillary's health than everyone else. What makes you so sure you know more? How are you qualified to diagnose her without actually performing an examination? You're a licensed physician, I assume? So this is all one big conspiracy theory to cover up her crippling Parkinson's, huh? Well, not a doctor, Darren. I am about the most unenthusiastic fan of Hillary Clinton's, but you're not the smartest kid in the class, you don't know more than everyone else, and I don't trust doctors who graduated from the World Wide Web Medical School who got their residency at Facebook Medical Center.
Did their internship at Wikipedia Memorial.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I can tell you I've had pneumonia before, and that old bat's more hale and hearty than I'll ever hope to be. So until you can show up with an actual, you know, diploma, a medical license from somewhere other than the Hogwarts school, you might want to restrict your conspiracy theories to your homepage, because you're not convinced.
So wait. He claimed that this has been put out there by the Young Turks?
Oh, yeah.
I can't see that. I think he must have mistaken the Young Turks for Alex Jones.
So I basically gave him the "you're dismissed," and then I posted a YouTube video. Do you remember the general fainting at the Pentagon podium?
Yes.
Okay, and I said, "Well, not a doctor's sign. Your diagnosis: Parkinson's, muscular dystrophy. Oh no, could it be sudden onset amyotrophic lateral sclerosis? Is he gonna die? For God's sakes, man, you're a doctor. Do something." So he got pretty pissed. He goes, "Obviously, you don't have to be a doctor to hit a nerve on folks with extremely thin skin." I said, "No, but you do have to be a doctor to diagnose a disease in somebody with any credibility. You can accuse me of having thin skin how you like. Not a doctor. You're still full of shit."
I don't remember anybody predicting the imminent demise of George H.W. Bush when he yacked all over the Japanese prime minister.
Emperor, yes, I know.
All right, he got the... Right.
He's going, and then he goes, "Careful, don't have an aneurysm." I said, "Great, now you're diagnosing me."
Well, you know where all this, you know where all this remote diagnosis comes from?
I didn't care, actually. Where's it coming from?
It comes from the fact that there was no political price paid by Jeb Bush, mm-hmm, back when he was, and all the other goddamn Republicans, when they were remote diagnosing Terri Schiavo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because remember how Bill Cat Killer Frist put his Hippocratic digits to his temple, and predicted that Terri Schiavo would be running a marathon inside of 6 weeks if we just didn't unplug her.
That's right.
And Jebbia Bush, and on and yeah, every Republican. She can live a long, healthy, and fruitful life as an eggplant. There was no political price paid for that stupidity, and so consequently, people feel free to do it now.
Well,
now let's.
It's just so damned easy, you know. Anybody with a prehensile thumb and a keyboard.
But now we'll move to the portion of the analysis that will piss off the hardcore hilarians. This shit is beginning to make me nervous, Carol.
Yeah.
That's not me saying that a 68-year-old woman does not have is not perfectly within her right to have walking pneumonia. I kind of admire the stamina that she. Oh Jesus, he admires Hillary Clinton. God damn, he's just another Hillary Clinton apologist. I kind of admire the stamina that it took to get up and go and, you know, and do that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, down here and further south and out where you are. 84 degrees, please. You climb roofs in 102.
Yeah, I have.
But you're not 68.
No, but.
And you're kind of, I guess, accustomed to it.
Yeah, no, I still hate it.
You hate it.
And I still feel like shit at the end of the day after.
You hate it, but you expect it. And so I mean, Jesus Christ, I was wandering around the web today and I saw people arguing over which was more important, the actual temperature or the feels like temperature. Shit,
oh,
you not.
For fuck's sake.
But the fact of the matter is she's dressed in dress clothing for a memorial service for 9/11. And that's another topic. I got up yesterday morning. I looked and I went, oh. And I hate myself for feeling this way because my first thought was, oh, it's 9/11. God
damn. What, you didn't want to have the 15th funeral?
I know.
I wasn't having it. I was not having it. I'm sorry. I got to move on. And it doesn't mean that I'm being disrespectful to the people who died. Doesn't mean that I never forget. It doesn't mean that I'm going to forget. It means that, you know, I'm sorry, Bob, but if the terrorists get me, I want you guys to like, I do not want anybody participating in grief porn. I want you to go right straight to the regular kind. And then,
nice. Wait. You can't just do that.
But I want everybody to lay down their Bibles and their guns and just go do something nice for somebody. And that's how you honor me.
Yeah. And every year on the date, you don't want them splashing your photograph all over the media. Yeah, remember, it's been a year now. No.
No, I don't.
And so, you know, my own personal, because
tell some racy story of something awful I said once.
Yeah, I'm just shallow as hell. So my response to it was to make sure that I did not watch any NFL professional football games until long after the first quarter had begun.
No, oh, the best part was watching the national anthem at the Chiefs game.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Was it special?
Yeah, it was special because the black players, they stood, but they didn't put their hands over their hearts. They locked arms, and one of them raised a fist.
Oh, no, not the fist.
Yes.
Must be a member of the Black Panthers.
How very Olympic award stand of them, you know.
And somewhere Bill O'Reilly was, you know, having a baby.
Oh, they were all having a fucking hissy, and I'm sitting there going, you know.
But that's what I mean. That's what I object to is it's not a memorialization. It is a fascist celebration now.
That was my problem. Is that they're sort of celebrating, and it's, you know, let's, who can we bomb next? You seriously? Like, we didn't bomb enough people?
9/11 Memorial. We killed 1 million innocent civilians. Ain't we, America?
I'm telling you what. Ooh.
So, I mean, so you know, I had to, and that led me to this little Star Trek fantasy that happened in my mind, where because obligatory Star Trek reference, where there's an episode where Spock looks at Kirk, because I'm definitely an original series guy. I mean, I like the Next Generation and stuff, but I'm a TOS guy, and he says, Captain, it appears that a rip in the space-time continuum occurred on September 11th, 2001. And Kirk looks at him and says, recalibrate, Spock. I think you may be off. And Spock says, by Jove, Captain. I wouldn't say by Jove. Captain, it appears you are correct. The actual beginning fraying of the space-time continuum occurred in December of 2000. Because that's what happens to me on the 9/11 memorial. I think about how unnecessary it was, and how much just absolute screwed uppery was necessary in order for 9/11 to happen. Now, I'm not one of those people who believes that George W. Bush put on a little black hat and a little black coat and a little black boots and planted little black bombs all over the World Trade Center. I don't. But I'm very near to being what's called a lie hopper, a they let it happen person, because there's just too damn much coincidental evidence. But even if they didn't let it happen, the amount of negligence that was on display almost guaranteed that it would.
Sure.
And so, you know, I go back to December 2000, you know. Our first female justice of the Supreme Court of the United States. Thanks so much, Sandra Day O'Connor, for giving us George W. Goddamn Bush. You know, the woman had a chance to put her country before her politics, but she's a Republican, and when the chips were down, she said, oh, no, I'm putting politics first, baby.
Well, she said she was sorry. She said it was wrong. What do you want?
Yeah, I know. And I feel about that apology the way I do about Hillary's apology for 9/11. I mean, for the Iraq War.
Could shit in one hand and put her apology in the other one and see which one gets filled up first.
Well, there we go. And so, because you will never convince me that had Al Gore been president of the United States, 9/11 would have happened.
Mm-mm. I don't believe so.
And from there, it's a whole different America.
I think they did it because they knew that we were just that stupid, that with this leadership in place, this is exactly what we were going to do.
Well, I mean, Osama tried.
The fucking country.
Yeah. Osama tried to sucker Bill Clinton into doing something in 1993, but he wouldn't take the bait. But when it came to George W. Bush, it was like taking falafel from a baby.
Oh, hell yeah.
And so, and on top of this, I actually read an opinion piece about how unsafe Merca is that they published in the Wall Street Journal by Count Dicula and his Renfield daughter. Oh, God, honey, go eat a bug. It was just disgusting. But All of that having been said, 9/11. I mean, I looked up. I realized it was 9/11. Just went, oh, damn! And it's been going on, and you know, and now it's like the 12 days of fucking Christmas. We're not gonna stop commemorating, read celebrating 9/11 for a couple more weeks. And I apologize. And you know, I knew people who were involved in it that day. And I'm not trying to be hurtful to anybody, but I think any competent therapist would tell you that you grieve, you go through the stages of grief, and you keep going. You don't double back, do you, Carol? And go for a re-wallow.
Just once a year. I couldn't even turn on the TV yesterday.
I mean, it's goddamn terrorism Christmas, isn't it?
Of course it is. It's grief porn.
And so, and because it wasn't the 14th, it wasn't the 16th. And God damn it, it's the 15th. That is 15th anniversary of 9/11. Well, Trump shows up and he's not even invited. One. Blows off the press, you know, because he's just that free.
Mm-hmm.
And Hillary shows up because can you imagine if she hadn't?
Of course.
Why does she hate America?
And then she had a medical episode.
And
whatever.
Yeah. And the doc now says that, you know, it was double pneumonia brought on by hay fever, you know, allergies, hay, and you know, it is that time of year.
And she's been hacking at the podium for how many weeks?
Yeah. But, you know, but the thing is, pneumonia is also a symptom. It doesn't have to be the disease.
Oh, please. Thank you. Not a doctor from Facebook Medical Center.
I mean, how much longer until these goddamn dimwits start quoting Dr. House?
They're not.
Yeah, I probably just missed it so far.
You missed it.
But all of these things having been said, I'm not more comfortable about the status of the presidential election.
No.
Stuff like this makes me a whole lot less comfortable, Carol.
Of course.
And I don't think I'm contributing to anything by talking about it, because the whole purpose of this ongoing conversation is for us to be able to sort of work through and process stuff, because as progressives and liberals, at least we hope, or the theory is that we don't do marching orders real good.
I know. But I have one burning question that has to be answered.
Okay. You know, they make medications for that burning feeling.
Now who the hell am I supposed to vote for?
Well, I can't tell you who to vote for.
I thought you were going to tell me to eat a shit sandwich on that one.
I can't take the emails anymore. Quit telling people how to vote. How do I say this? What happens? Okay, I'm just going to say this and get it over with. As was noted by a number of people earlier today and over the course of the weekend, once upon a time, the press sort of kept a president's or a presidential candidate's health issues on the down low. FDR, they did a yeoman job of trying to keep America from knowing that FDR couldn't walk.
I think ever since we got a graphic description of what happened in the Star Report, I don't think anything's ever going to be off limits ever again.
Nothing's off limits on a Democrat. Like I asked earlier, where's all the questions about, I mean, he's 70 years old. There's a whole bunch of older guys, I'm one of them, who can talk about the intelligent design that lies behind the prostate.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you get to 70, your odds of prostate cancer are almost better than not.
Yeah, they really are. Certainly an enlarged prostate.
And, you know, starting usually in one's 50s, one doesn't get all the way through the night without having it to get up and go pee.
That's right.
I'm not trying to be grotesque in this.
No, it's human physiology.
But Donald Trump, if he is elected president, and even that phrase is enough to give me the fantods, will be older than Ronald Reagan was when he was elected president, and Ronald Reagan started being symptomatic of Alzheimer's within the first 3 or 4 years.
Oh, yes. Probably closer to the first two.
And so, we're gonna reassure the country by having Dr. Oz talk with Trump about Trump's health? I mean, are we going to be treated to a live on-screen prostate exam?
Oh, can we?
I don't wanna. Or maybe behind a screen and, oh, Dr. Oz, I didn't know you cared.
No dinner first?
Read the card. Read the card. That's the punchline to a joke. But seriously, the double standard's got to go. But it won't because there's a standard for Hillary Clinton, you know, and this goes back to Matt Lauer. There's a standard for Hillary Clinton, and there's a standard for Donald Trump. And the next place Matt Lauer's seen in public, he's asking softball questions of Roger Goodell, the clown of a commissioner of the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, what is it? I mean, can you imagine the cholesterol intake of a Donald Trump? Because you know that guy's no vegan.
No.
I mean, the guy who tried to foist Trump steaks on the world is probably eating some pretty good steaks of his own, because those things sucked. yeah. What about his prostate? Hoghead in the chat room says, it's huge! but then this. What I was saying about FDR and you know, JFK had his own health problems. JFK became president when he was 43. Mm-hmm. FDR became president when he was 51. Mm-hmm. The words pneumonia and 68 are not the same thing as pneumonia and 35 or 43. And as I don't say this as a pro-Bernie person, or I say this as someone who wants Hillary Clinton to be elected president. I want to be 100% absolutely clear on that. I am not reassured at this point, Carol.
No, I'm not terribly either. However, I think a lot of that has to do with all of this just cacophony that's come off since yesterday. First of all, I don't think anyone would have even known about it 40 years ago.
No, that's point one.
And second of all, her doctor said she needs to rest. She needs to cancel her engagements for the next few days and do what she hasn't done, and that's rest. Because it's grueling. The campaigning for president is horrible. I couldn't do it. I couldn't keep up the pace.
We ain't 68. No, neither one of us.
No, could. I'm not.
But here's the next question. The problem here is that even on our side of the fence, let alone the birthers, deathers, tenthers, ninthers, baggers, birchers, and booger eaters.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a little bit of unease.
Well, yeah, because I think there's a lot of unease because in this case, the people I hear mouthing off about it the most are supposedly on our side.
Yeah, supposedly.
In some form or fashion. I mean, they're not Trumpsters, but The Jill Stein people are, you know, in absolute heaven over this story. Because, you know, we've got a vibrant woman we can put up. And it's like, what is it with the woman thing? Forget it. How about the most qualified person? Oh, that's right. We didn't want him.
And that's the next question. If the other shoe drops, Carol, and I'm not trying to be disloyal, and I'm not Hillary bashing. If the other shoe drops, what happens?
Well,
process-wise, what happens?
I don't know, but I'm pretty sure that they won't. They're not going to ask Bernie.
No, I guess it defaults to Kane.
That's exactly what I think they're going to do.
But by the same token, I was hit with a flash of, help us, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're our only hope. Bring in Uncle Joe.
That would be nice.
Meanwhile, Michael in Madison just sent me a link to, from August 8th, 2016.
Yeah.
The headline, your diet is probably healthier than Trump's. Large obnoxious man enjoys large obnoxious meals. There's pictures of him Garmin down half a bucket of Kentucky Fried. There's the now infamous picture of him with his taco bowl. The man's got a garbage diet.
Yeah.
He eats fast food because it's quick.
But assholes like that don't, you know, suffer from it. They, you know, they lived to be, you know, Phyllis Schlafly's age.
Trump once said in an interview, we should be eating a hamburger on a conference table and we should make better deals with China and others than forget the state dinners.
No, hamburger for them.
And so I'm supposed to, so I'm supposed to feel good? Or feel confident about his health? I mean, what?
I frankly don't even think about his health.
Oh, and by the way, he likes, and this is more of a character thing, he likes his steak well done.
Ugh. Of course he does.
Donald Trump eats his steak well done, grilled to leathery brownness, sapped of all juice and flavor and purpose.
That's sort of a description of him.
It is, isn't it? And so if there's a takeaway out of all of this, Carol.
Yes.
It's what? That it is a
look,
it's a long short ride to November the 8th.
What do we got? 57 days left?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that? Okay, the next 72 hours are going to be very telling. So I think I can, you know, suck it up and ignore the stupidity for 3 days. Literally, my mission over the past, I've seen so much hatred and so much ugliness. My mission over the past 3 or 4 days has been to try to reach out and do as many nice things for people as I can humanly do, Bob.
I've noticed that.
And to bring as many people on board to do that as we can. And it is from making sure homeless people ate over the weekend to getting another homeless man a set of dentures. And I absolutely loved that story. And it was something that came to me from a friend of a friend. And she needed some work done at her place. And my friend went over to help her. And there was a homeless Mexican man who saves stray dogs in the area. And he had brought a mama dog and her 8 puppies to this lady and said, I can't take care of them. Can you help me? And she said, sure, I'll help you. And she managed to find homes for all of them. She kept one of them. And she said he stops in all the time wanting to know if he can do anything for her work, for her to help pay her back for taking care of those dogs. The guy has nothing. He's homeless. And he's trying to pay her back. So yesterday he came over and he helped my friend clear all the brush and do all this stuff and get all this stuff done for her. And at the end of the day, Rob was like, we're going to grill some steaks and we're going to have some food and you're staying. And he was so touched that he was being treated like a decent person because it's just such a foreign thing to him. And when they sat down to eat, he about choked on a potato because Rob quietly whispered over and said, he's got no teeth. And she asked him about it, and he was very embarrassed about it and very shy. And he said, look, I've been trying to save up for a year to go cross back over the border because for $500, I can get a set of dentures in Mexico. And he said, but, you know, I go to work for these people in this area, and I'll work for them all day, and then they don't pay me. Because, Jesus. You know, that's what people do, is you stiff a homeless person who's sweated blood, buckets of blood for you all day. Because what are they going to do? Get a lawyer? Come after you? I guess it's easy to treat them like that. So when she told me that story, I said, fuck that. We'll get him some dentures. 13 hours later, we raised all the money. And a lot of my friends chipped in. And you were one of them. And it took 13 hours, and we got the money together and got this man what he couldn't save up in a year. And whatever extra money we take in, we're getting him a bicycle so that he can get around. And then anything else can go toward, you know, him working toward permanent shelter. And, you know, that's the power of, you know, decent people kind of coming together and seeing a wrong and trying to right it. And many hands made for light work.
Yep.
And getting it done. It was a beautiful thing. And he found out this morning that all of the money is there. And he was pretty overwhelmed.
Beautiful. So, well, it's pretty obvious he's got a decent soul, because...
Anybody who doesn't have a roof over their head but has enough concern for the creatures of the earth being cared for, I think it says a lot about them. But she posted his picture, and of course the family dog was, you know, all over him. And, you know, you got to trust a guy when the family dog, you know, thinks you're about it. But it was just a really sweet thing. And I've just decided that the uglier the world gets, the more I'm going to reach out and do things for the least of us.
Yeah, just try to pull a little bit of the ugly out of it. Like putting tobacco on a bee sting.
It kind of is. And, you know, another dear friend of mine had his wife had early onset Alzheimer's, and he had kept her at home with him. You know, they'd only been married for like 10 years, and they had like maybe 1.5 good years together before it started getting really bad. And the end was just, I mean, and his friends all financially kept him afloat, and she died last week. And he told me, he said, you know, I needed to be a part of this. You know, when I heard it, because I've just cried until I can't cry anymore. And I said, well, honey, you know, what it boils down to is, you know, sometimes the karma bus runs you over, and sometimes it stops and gives you a lift, and you just need a lift. And I think, you know, maybe that's how we kind of counteract some of this stuff.
And oddly enough, you did that without any GoFundMes or anything. So there's no 11% VIG to be paid.
Well, there not only that, it was something that was so easily taken care of. All I had to do was, I put a note up last night at what, 8, 9 o'clock, and by 7 o'clock this morning, by 8 o'clock this morning, it was all there.
Wow. Wow.
And it was just like, look, and there were some people going, I'm so sorry, I can't get, hey, don't be sorry. Don't be sorry. You know, all I need you to do is cheer us on. I don't ever want anybody to give money they don't have.
No, and I mean, the same thing applies here. I've said that a million times, you know, do not hurt yourself. We'll figure out
a way.
Never.
You know, cheer us on. That's all we need.
Oh, but speaking of cheering on,
yeah.
You know that fundraising goal that started $189.
Yeah.
And Ron from the soon to be refrozen North.
Yeah. Yeah.
Said if you knock that down by $100, you know, mm-hmm. the 1-2 challenge.
Yeah.
Well, that fundraising goal has been knocked down by more than $100. It's down to $74, courtesy of. Everybody heretofore named, and also our buddy Randy. So
thank you, Randy.
Yeah, and so that happened, and that's a thing, which is awesome.
Well, you know, because it just doesn't take much, and then, you know, and I've also been spending a lot of time with this really cool neighborhood kid.
Oh, I read about him. I love that kid.
He's 10 years old, and he is the funniest little thing. He has
no, his Secret Service moment. You got to share that.
Well, when school started, I guess one of the very first things that they started talking about, of course, was the presidential election. And they were talking about the jobs of the Secret Service. I guess one of the kids asked, what are all those men in the black suits? And the teacher was explaining it was the Secret Service and what they do. And so he comes over one night, and he's sitting there, and he goes, can I talk to you about this Secret Service thing? And I was like, sure. And he goes, now let me get this straight. He goes, their job is to take a bullet for the president. And I laughed, and I said, well, yeah, but it's more than that. I said, they do a lot of things. They provide security for the first family. They protect presidential nominees. He goes, what? He goes, you mean Donald Trump has Secret Service protection? And I said, well, of course. And he gets real quiet for a minute. He looks at me and he goes, if I've got time to jump in front of a bullet, he's got time to move.
Wait a minute. Hey, tell the kid, and we're going to protect names and identities here, but tell the kid he got one of these.
I thought that was just about the best damn thing I'd ever heard in my life, and it was all, and I try so hard to maintain a poker face when he says some of this stuff, but like yesterday, I love Sundays, because he always knows that I'm home on Sunday, and he likes to hang out here, and I had to get some stuff done yesterday, so I said, I got to go to town to get groceries. He goes, I'll go with you. I said, all right. So, and he was helpful, loaded everything in the car and everything. So we stopped on the way back, and I got him an ice cream. And so he's sitting there, and he goes, you know, he said, if I could drive, I'd take you out for ice cream once in a while. I said, well, you'll have your license in 6 years. I'm pretty sure I'll still be around. And he goes, I don't know, you're pretty old.
You know, you need to introduce him to the kid that wrote the essay.
No shit. But he says shit like this all the time. I don't know, you're pretty old. And I said, well, I think I can hold out for 6 more years if I thought there was a future in it for me with ice cream. He goes, well, that'd do it for me. We'll see.
I mean, so do you have a really, I mean, is DQ okay? Or is there a really kick-ass ice cream parlor somewhere near Hooters?
They opened a new creamery here in town, and it's all, homemade. It's really good.
Ooh.
It's really, really good. So, yeah, we did some major unhealthy eating on the way home, but it was good. But last week I was too, he comes here because I cook and because his mother can burn water. And he spawned from two of the dumbest dumps I've ever met in my life. So I'm pretty sure he comes here for conversation more than food. And I was just so tired last weekend. And so I took him to Subway for lunch. And we're standing in line, and I ordered a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich. And the sandwich artist said, would you like that toasted? Aristotle raises his Coke cup, and he goes, do your sandwich!
This kid has a future, Carol. I'd just do away with the middleman and adopt if I were you.
Sometimes I look at him, and I'm going, oh, my God, you're mine. I think this is my child. This was the child I was supposed to have. But I was trying to explain to him what a jukebox was one day. He's like, "What? I don't know how it came up in the conversation. I said, you know, it's like a 10,000 pound iPod.
Oh, that's no, you know what? That's where you whip out the pocket device and look up the original opening credits for Happy Days.
For Happy Days?
You know, where it picks up the record and drops the record, all that mechanical goodness.
God, I remember those. But he was just fascinated. And he asked me about a movie one day, and I said, oh, I've got that one. And I reached over and I handed him a VHS tape, and he's like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Oh.
So, you know, VHS.
Yeah, well, that's where we haul out the T.S. Eliot and say, I grow old, I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled.
Well, it's not a wonder the poor kid thinks I've got one foot in the grave. You know,
but Carol, don't feel beat up. If you were 23, he'd think you were ancient.
Well, yeah, but
I mean, that's just the That's the scope of perspective at that age.
That kid is so good for my soul, though.
I mean, goddamn, when you're 10, the 12-year-olds are your elders.
Well, that's true. That's true. And I'm sure he looks at all this gray hair, and he's just like, oh, man, tomorrow could be the day. But he's so honest about everything. That's what I love about him. I was like, you know, you're going to have your driver's license in 6 years. I'll be around. I don't know. You're pretty old.
Yeah, well, you know, 6 years, 6,000. 6 years, 6,000 years. It's, you know, not that there's really not that much. I mean, it sounds like at the tender age of 10, he's got a firm grip on the epochal scale of time. I mean, yesterday was the dinosaurs, right?
Yes, exactly. And he's probably a lot closer than the Christians.
Oh, God. Yeah. And by the way, to a totally separate topic. I have to add another name to the list of ninthers, tenthers, deathers, birthers, baggers, birchers. Healthers. Healthers, Carol. Healthers. They're a thing now. Good. Healthers.
Who's that now?
Well, I mean, all the people are, my God, she's got Parkinson's, Zika, Ebola. Those are healthers.
Hey, Gary Johnson's got Aleppo. You don't get over that overnight.
No, you go to the Aleppo cutoff and get out of your car and cut off your Aleppo.
I looked back.
You really interviewed him once?
4 years ago to the day today. Yes, when he was running for vice president on the Libertarian ticket 4 years ago. Yes. And he's actually one of the nicest men you would ever want to talk to. Dumb as a stick.
Well, I mean, he was a Republican governor, after all.
Which just confounds me. But, you know, West New Mexico. But still, I mean, he literally is so clueless about what real-world people go through on a day-to-day basis. I remember having the conversation when we were talking about he really thought that the Affordable Health Care Act was just, you know, horrible and, you know, there was a better way and that, you know, we could nationalize health care, you know, but everybody'd have to kick in $3,500. And I'm like, I don't have $3,500. Oh, who can't come up with $3,500? I said, well, you know, I could, I guess, but there's that, you know, living indoors and eating three squares thing.
Having two kidneys.
Yes. You know, and he laughed. He laughed when I said it, when I was not kidding. But he is a pleasant man to talk to. But stupid.
That's what you, I mean, that's what you get, though. I mean,
but now he's running for big boy president, so I'm sure he didn't talk.
And not ready for prime time.
Indeed.
No, not even. So I got one more Moran Monday thing to share with you.
Okay, and then I'm going to go because I'm sure there are people waiting.
It wouldn't be Moran Monday if we. I mean, we haven't had a Louis Asparagus Gohmert sighting in a while.
Oh God.
So, our buddy Beth in Dallas posted this, and I immediately said, "Oh, that's got to go in the stack." It was this past Friday. You know how I just mentioned a minute ago that healthers are a thing. Well, naturally, Louis is a healther. And, you know, over the weekend, they had their Values Voter Summit, Carol.
Oh, yes, I know. Rendering the words completely
Orwellian, Kafka-esque, dare we say. So he took to the podium at the Values Voter Summit, said, "A true believer does what Jesus did and still does but what Jesus did and still does. But you don't make fun of people who are impaired, have special needs. And whether you like her or not, Hillary Clinton has made clear she is mentally impaired. That's not somebody you should be making fun of. I get the impression that in law school, along the way, she's been very, very smart. But I don't know, maybe it was the concussion, the fallback that she did. Or maybe, who knows, they won't tell us what's really going on with her. We need to be praying for Hillary Clinton. There's special needs there. There's mental impairment."
I know, we're not supposed to make fun of people with special needs, and yet the words short bus come up every time Louis Gohmert's name is mentioned.
God almighty. And let's remember, everybody, that's a Christian.
That's right. You know why he doesn't wear his white helmet?
No, why?
Makes it so hard to lick the windows.
Yeah, his tongue's just not long enough, is it?
No, it's a shame, really.
Well, okay, so you know how I earlier didn't tell you to go eat a shit sandwich? You just made me think of Louis Gohmert's tongue, Carol, so you can go eat a shit sandwich now.
I'm a giver.
You are a giver. Damn it. Yes, sometimes you just don't know when to quit giving.
I know.
Hillary Clinton impaired. My God, somebody gave Louis Gohmert a law degree, too.
I cannot believe that man was ever a judge. That is the most frightening fucking thing I've ever heard.
Well, the only way you can understand that is to understand the nature of that joke that lawyers tell each other.
What is it?
What do you call a lawyer with an IQ of 12?
Your Honor?
Your Honor. Yeah. But this idea that, he not only mocks Christ, but he manages to get in a dig at people with special needs.
I think they all mock Christ.
Oddly enough, I have not seen an anguished and furious post from Godzilla from Wasilla over that.
I don't know.
I guess it's okay when Louis does it. Louis's special.
I don't know. She's probably being kept pretty busy taking care of her bastard grandchildren.
Yeah, who's your daddy? Right?
Which one?
Carol, you have a lovely evening, dear.
I shall. It's time to go find something wonderful to eat.
Did Mr. Carol ever try the Kaneka?
He did. He liked it better than I did. It was a little too spicy for me.
Well, it can be. I mean, yeah, it is spicy.
It had a kick, but yeah, he loved it. The hotter the better for him.
Yeah, tell him to try it on the grill next.
Well, I shall.
It gets even more special on the grill.
Okay.
All right.
I will tell him.
Carol, you have a lovely evening. You giver, you.
And you, my friend.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker. Accept no substitutes. 27 minutes before the hour. And yes, we are only $74 away from our fundraising goal for the evening, which is stupendous. And we have apparently met Ron's 1-for-2 challenge, equally stupendous. And remember, we have 299 $1 contributions to go to meet Larry's full week $666 challenge. And he said he'd go ahead and throw in the extra dollar, but he'll do it separately, so it's a nice round $666 what you get. And that's mostly for people who have never contributed, because it's a buck. So 299 to go. And let's run over to the stress line where Punky and his translator, Scott, have patiently waited. Hey, guys. Oh, Scott. Oh, darn it. I know what happened. Oh, this is crazy. So, Scott, I'm terribly sorry. Please dial right back. For some reason or another, the Bluetooth dropped out. This will only take a minute. Let me get this thing reconnected. How does that even happen? Okay, we're connected again. That's a good thing. Dial back, Scott. Ah, there's Scott coming in on the Skype line. That works equally well. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob, can you hear me okay?
I got you fine.
Okay, the audio on the telephone line went to shit there a little while ago.
Well, yeah, because the phone forgot that it was attached to Bluetooth for some reason or another. Maybe I wasn't holding my tongue right or something.
Listen, it happens to me all the time. If I got a nickel for every time I didn't correctly hold my tongue, there'd be a lot of frustrated, angry women.
And suddenly this has turned into Tongue Monday, having started with Louis Gohmert, and we're just going to go downhill from there.
Okay, listen. This I'm going to go for brevity on this call, but hopefully I can get a good answer. I had the most interesting, lengthy conversation with my younger brother in Florida last night. To recap for some of the listeners who may not know about him, he was he's a gun enthusiast, to put it mildly. He was in the Secret Service based at the White House for the better part of 25 years. Everything that he knows or thinks that he knows, he gets from Mark Levin on the radio and from his books. And the subject in the conversation got around to the guy not standing for the national anthem last night. So we chawed on that for a while. And he says that Levin contends that there is no constitutional right regarding freedom of speech that applies to someone who sits rather than stands for the performance of the national anthem. And I said, no, wait a minute, what do you base that on? And he said that it's not listed in the Constitution, okay, specifically.
Shoot me.
And I said,
shoot me now.
Well, okay. But no, but this gets better. So I said, well, okay, wait a minute. I said, yeah, there's a lot of things that are not specifically written out in the Constitution. But setting that aside, I said, and he said that the right just doesn't exist, okay, if you're a literalist like Scalia was and some of these other justices. And I said, well, wait a minute. Several years ago, the Supreme Court ruled that if you burned an American flag, you were okay because that fell under the provision of freedom of speech and expression and freedom of conscience. And I said, now, are you telling me that that the football player can burn the flag and that's protected expression, but sitting during the national anthem, a song about the flag, is not part of his free speech or free expression rights? And he said, that's it. And I said, well, wait a minute. The logical progression in that argument is, well, he said that only the NFL would be violating a supposed right, and that wouldn't even be true because if they didn't allow players to do that, if it was written into their contract, it would be a matter between an employer and an employee.
That much is true. It's contractual.
Okay, but I said, wait a minute. Do you mean to tell me that the right of freedom of speech and protection does not exist, and he limited the infringement to government entities? I said, you mean that the freedom of speech and expression in regards to sitting during the national anthem only exists if a government entity barrels onto the situation and makes an issue of it? And he said, yeah, that's pretty much it. And I said, well, there's got to be something. Either you misheard Mark Levin or I misheard you, because that's ridiculous. Okay.
No. Mark Levin's just nuts.
Oh, I know. But and we went round and round on this. And finally I said, well, George, this is probably going to be one of those things that we'll have to agree to not agree on, because either I'm missing something that you're saying or you're missing something that I'm saying. But I understand the contractual thing, but let's say the NFL fires the football player. Let's say there is a rule that says you must stand, and he sits anyway, and he gets fired because he supposedly broke his contract. If that went to a court, and the court decided that it's the same sort of freedom of speech and expression as was noted in the flag-burning ruling, and then he said, well, you know, the Supreme Court and other federal judges are all the time butting in where they're not concerned. And I said, well, wait a minute, they're not concerned. What the fuck are judges supposed to be doing? They judge. They take the law and they apply it, you know, based on law. And he said, well, they have done this for years. They weasel stuff in that is a stretch at best. So we just finally moved on to another conversation. But
how about them Jaguars?
Well, what is your take on this? I mean, was he right? Is he possibly right?
I think that a far better precedent is to be drawn from, and it's a West Virginia Supreme Court case that arose out of West Virginia. You can't compel a Jehovah's Witness to pledge allegiance to the flag.
Yeah, I remember that case.
And it's also a longstanding principle that you cannot compel someone in open court to swear to God or put one's hand on the Bible in order to ascertain truthfulness of a witness on the stand.
Right.
Now, both of those are, in fact, governmental actions. Actions of contract are entirely different animals. John Rocker comes to mind. Do you remember John Rocker, who was an ace reliever for the Braves for a while?
Yeah.
And he opened his mouth and crammed in one foot, then he worked in the other foot, stuck his finger up his nose and got it, and then picked his big toe with it. Because it was all about who he didn't want to sit next to those people on the subway in New York or something, if you recall. And I remember the Whambulance getting cranked up in right wing media, and his rights were not being infringed upon because no governmental entity was quashing them. However, the right of free speech is a right that attaches to people sort of regardless, and anyone who takes action against someone based upon their exercise of speech does risk at least having it called into question. Now, for instance, all these goddamn NFL games, Scott, are played in publicly financed stadiums. And by publicly financed, we mean government.
Yeah, I tried to bring that into the conversation, but it only seemed to confuse him even more, because I said they are basically a legal monopoly, as I understand it.
Even regardless of that, those stadiums are public facilities, or semi-public, public-private, whatever you want, a hybrid.
Yeah,
but there's public money involved, and so what the courts often do is they look for some sort of nexus between government and the venue complained of. Okay, so the public schools, to cite the New Jersey case that I was talking with Carol about, the public schools in Camden, New Jersey, issue this completely rational statement saying, free speech is free speech, and the public schools are not going to quash it. The Catholic schools, on the other hand, said, yeah, we're not the government. We're not a bunch of sissies. We'll bust your ass. Because what they would claim is that if somebody knelt or sat or whatever, stood on their head during the national anthem, and they then suspended the kid from school or expelled him, or her, and the kid raised a constitutional claim, I presume the Catholic school would then counter saying, no, if you tell us that we can't abuse our students, you're violating our First Amendment right to freedom of religion and conscience. And remember, we're all about conscience here in Merca now, Scott, because after all, That's what makes sure that a good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual pharmacist can refuse to give a woman her slut medicine.
Yeah. Well, and see, one of the things that he did, he even tried to pull out the old chestnut about the rights not coming from government. The rights come from the Creator. And I said, by your own thinking, George.
Yeah, that ain't what the Constitution says.
Yeah, but if you believe that, then you should also believe that the right of this guy to sit, stand, crochet, sit on his hands, or burn the flag as he sits, is something that is none of the government or the NFL's concern. And like you say, if it did become a matter of being fired or suspended or penalized in any way, and I'm not even a lawyer, but if he had a halfway sharp lawyer, the lawyer could pull out some of these rationales and shoot down the notion, and then it would become a matter of law But he doesn't buy that because the Supreme Court is always overstepping their bounds. And I said, well, that's just happy horse shit. I said, the right exists regardless of what a government or any other entity does or doesn't do. Now, it is true that it may not have been tested yet or decided yet in any legal setting, but he was not able to get his head around that notion.
And let's remember that the tax status that the NFL enjoys is a creature of government as well. Okay, so you know there's that nexus in the process. I can't imagine owner, although it may happen going forward. I can't imagine standing for the national anthem being negotiated into a contract, and one of these umpty bajillionaire sports agent lawyers sitting still for it and saying, "Yeah, sure, my client will sign." Yeah, okay, he'll sign if you put another $10 million in the pot. You want to pay him $10 million to stand for the national anthem? That's cool. Because anything that is not patently illegal can properly be the subject of a contractual agreement.
Well, doesn't the NBA currently...
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought, that their players are required contractually to stand.
And for precisely the same reason. A few years ago, who was the player? He was Muslim and didn't want to stand. Well, now everybody stands.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
I do. I don't remember the particulars, but that's where that comes from.
Because if you take his argument, and to the logical conclusion, he's basically saying that a business entity is not capable or has never been known to make a requirement in a contractual arrangement that turns out to be unconstitutional.
Look at teacher contracts in the 20th century. Most of them had morality clauses, so that if Mrs. Schmendrick was seen buying a pint of old Panther piss down at the state store, well, she could be summarily dismissed.
Or if
Miss Schmendrick happened to get in the family way, she could be summarily dismissed on a morals clause.
Yeah, well, that's not just the teachers. I mean, for years, entertainment figures and public figures had to sign these morality clauses, or they were part of the contract that they signed. And hell, going back to the blacklisting days of the 50s and 60s, early 60s.
You had to swear you are not now and have never been a member of the Communist Party.
Yeah, yeah. Look at the story of John Henry Falk in the book Fear on Trial. That's a classic case of that type of shit, that blacklisting nonsense.
Well, Trumbo from the movie Trumbo, sure.
Exactly, yeah. So I thought I'd run it past you because and the listeners out there, because something just didn't ring exactly true, and I just considered the source. I mean, he hears what he wants to hear. It's what it comes down to.
Well, you know, on this, and I hate to admit it, but I think it's a reality. At least we can be honest with ourselves over here. Whether it's progressive radio or right wing hate radio, it's subject to the preferences that are driven by driven for confirmation bias in either instance. I mean, I don't listen to Rush Limbaugh because I don't give what he has to say. I'm actively opposed to it because the man just opens a microphone and lets the OxyContin talk for him. He's nuts.
Well, there is that.
And your brother probably would. Well, I'm sure. First of all, he'd be terribly, terribly put off by the use of the magic F word.
No, but no, not really.
Oh no, if a left, no. If a lefty does it, you're damn right. But you know that guy's nuts. He's a communist. Okay, well, I've been called a communist. I mean, Jesus, back in the bad old days of local radio over in Beckley, my nickname was among the wingnuts was Bob Al Kincaida.
Well, I think maybe some of the problem is my brother's thinking has gotten additionally scrambled because Mark Levin recently came out saying that he was going to vote.
Really? He came out, did he? I can't imagine another guy wanting him, but never mind.
No, he came out saying that he would be voting for Trump, even though he and my brother both were huge Ted Cruz supporters all through the primary. And maybe it has just struck his mind in such a way that it scrambled all his neurons, you know, and it's, he's...
Well, I know we're talking about family here, but I think over there on that side, the neurons come pre-scrambled.
Well, that has
for easy manipulation.
That's been pretty apparent in all the encounters I've had with right-wing radio or TV or people. They're a couple of sandwiches short of a full picnic basket anyway. And then you add the political nonsense that they're exposed to like 24/7. And it's a sad thing to behold.
Well, I mean, it's like Hollywood, TV, that kind of stuff. I mean, I love, and Ferg and I had this discussion recently. He was like, I don't know how you stand to watch that. That is the dumbest damn show. I'm like, yeah, it came from coming from the guy who watches, who likes Jackass. The Frasier sitcom, that whole thing is on Netflix right now, and you can just murder a couple of hours giggling merrily away. At least I do at the banter and the wordplay. And then you consider what a right-wing POS Kelsey Grammer is. And it's in some cases it's hard to separate the two. But there you go. And I'm sure he's a Trumpanzee of the highest order right now.
Yeah, well, it's going. And see, the thing is, my brother, see, I said, well, why don't you just write in Ted Cruz come November? And he said, well, no, I can't do that. He said I could write, the Cat in the Hat as a write-in out here in California because it wouldn't make any difference. But down there it would because things are, like, going back and forth. Currently, I think they're tied in one of the electoral maps that I looked at down in Florida. So I said, well, go ahead and do it. You know, just get out and do that on November 15th.
And see, that's the way right-wingers are. They understand political realities. He may not like the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, but by God, he'll vote for him because he understands that there's only going to be one winner.
Yeah, but I told him, I said, you just vote.
You couldn't even talk him into Gary Johnson?
No, well, I tried that. And he agreed with me that my dead calico cat, Michi, who's been dead a little over a year now, has a better chance of being elected president than Gary Johnson or Joe.
Well, that doesn't matter. You're voting for the lesser of evils. You're not doing your job, Scott. You're falling down here, buddy. You don't agree with him. You don't get all wishy-washy. You explain to him how Gary Johnson has the true libertarian Ayn Rand vision for America that America so desperately needs.
Yeah, but you're right. I should have held.
But if he's a veteran of the Secret Service, he'd probably never vote for Gary Johnson because he's one of those dope heads.
Well, I told him, I said, George, in the final analysis, you'll have to do what you have to do. But I implore you to go out and vote on November 15th and everything will be fine. I can support that whole.
You devious bastard, you.
No matter who you vote for, November 15th, circle that in red on your big old calendar with Mark Levin's centerfold on the page and you're doing God's work. So.
Keep working that. Keep working that. Yeah, I'm proud of it. Wait a minute. Yeah, we're passing those out this evening. So,
all right. Yeah. All right. Got the
I hope that didn't bother Punky.
No, my life is complete, and he's thrilled for the accolade.
Yeah, Punky just sitting there munching on those morning glory seeds and watching the walls melt.
Yeah, he's just sitting there quietly looking at me. He had a little health challenge the other day.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, and the whole time that I've owned him, which is like 19 years, about once or twice a year, he'll have a little spell where he'll get disoriented and weak on one side. And I've never been able to get a good answer as to what the hell's going on with him. But usually after 10 minutes, he's fine. Well, this last time, Saturday morning when it happened, it took longer for him to really snap out of it. And he's okay now in the sense that he's way better than he was Saturday. And it's probably something, not a stroke necessarily, but something in his little birdie system that goes a little haywire. And his left, I can't tell whether this is left or his right foot, is still a little weak or whatever. But he is like 90% back to his usual self. And he can fly fine and all that. And he sings a little bit. And he, you know, preens himself and eats and drinks. You know, and I've got to face the fact. I mean, he turned 20 or 19 this year. And that's a little long for a cockatiel. And he's my little buddy. And, you know, I just support him in any way that I can. And, you know, one of these days he's going to go off to wherever good birds go, and I'll just have to deal with it. But, you know, he seems to be, like, working at 90% now, so that's good. I appreciate, you know, that. So send out warm wishes and good thoughts to Punky and the rest of us here, the cat and me, and we'll proceed as well as we can. I mean, what else can you do?
Now I'm going to fret, but tell Punky that all his other little friends out here are firmly behind him.
Well, and I appreciate that, and I know he does too, because he's such a joy. I mean, as birds go, you wouldn't think that a bird would have as much personality and fun in his little birdie heart as this bird has had for these many, many years. But he's a real sweetie, and every day to have him around is a joy, except when he shrieks his little birdie guts out, which he is wont to do every now and again for no discernible reason.
Discernible to you, Buster.
I didn't mean to bring you down with that, but I figured the listeners and you also wonder about Punky, and they wonder about me even more than Punky, but... I'd say he's at 90%, and I'll take that any day over
absolutely
over anything less.
Well, so. Give him something special, or you know, do something that he likes, or what? Just you know, tell him we love him. Okay?
All right, I will. All right,
Scott, you have yourself a good evening.
Okay, Bob, and as always, thanks for the conversation. It's always great talking with you and listening to the other callers.
Absolutely, a joy talking to you. Take care.
All right, man.
Bye
care.
Now. All right, so let's see, with the 1-for-2 challenge in there, we're down to 24 bucks to go, fundraising-wise, this evening. That's awesome. You know what would be really cool if that was 24 separate $1 contributions to go toward Larry's full week funding 666 challenge? And on the way out the door, a poem, courtesy of Michael in Madison. Untitled Number 47, Make America Great Again. The basket of deplorables, they cling to guns or religion. Taco trucks on every corner. Binders full of women. Some, I assume, are good people, built the pyramids to store grain. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes casting aspersions on my asparagus. I believe these words came from the Pokemon movie. I like people who weren't captured. Please clap. Well, it's pretty clear we're going to have to add bongos into the mix now. Where's my beret? So that's it for Moran Monday. Join in tomorrow for Titanic Tuesday, as we will continue our focus on the bazaar. And God knows, they're there in rich abundance. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.